Brought to you in part by Lulu's Bait Shack, fresh Florida seafood, gigantic fishbowl drinks, and live music. Lulu's in Beach Place on A1A, the heart of world-famous Fort Lauderdale Beach.
It's the Bill Murphy Show, a daily one-on-one 30-minute interview featuring people from all walks of life. Available daily at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
And a happy holiday to all as we come to you with the July 5th, 2010 broadcast. A week off due to technical difficulties. We're up and running and optimized. We'll tell you all the details on how the site is working a little bit later on in the show. But in summary, all of the iTunes protocols working correctly. You can get the subscription on your iTunes through right to your iPod. We also have an Apple iPhone app going on out there that you can just have your quick shortcut to the show every single day. And we've got it working exactly the way that we wanted to have it working. So we appreciate you putting up with that week of a brief hiatus there as we got things back in order. And we're back with a new week of guests. A lot of great guests to look forward to this week as we bring you people from every walk, all walks of life, proving the point that everybody has a story. And today, have we got a story for you. As we go, as we tape the night before, it's actually still Independence Day, as we tape ahead of time for this July 5th show. Just got done watching a pretty cool fireworks display here in Plantation, Florida. But while everybody celebrates the holiday, our truckers are on the road doing their work. And today we bring you Ken Plank, who is a classic trucker, probably the only trucker I know on my Facebook list of friends. Ken, thanks for joining me, buddy, from the road tonight.
How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing great, man. We go back a long way, and you, first of all, there's one term that I need to clear up. Now, I've heard the abbreviation OTR referring to truckers. Now, what exactly does that stand for? Let's start with that.
That means over-the-road trucker.
As simple as that.
To simplify it, somebody that travels from east to west coast or does a regional longer than in-state or tri-state.
Right.
Well, tri-state would kind of still fall into the over-the-road, but you're home a heck of a lot more often than I am.
Exactly right. The true OTR drivers are the ones that go across country and, you know, from just traveling long distances from one stop to the next. Now, just as to set the example, where are you calling me from this tonight?
I'm in California. I'm south of Indio, about probably 60 miles between Blythe and Indio, California, on I-10.
Oh, you are on I-10. Okay.
Got a sign right here. I'm 65 miles from Indio and 192 from L.A.
There you go. So I was just going to ask you if you were east of Indio, but I guess that explains that. That's a weird coincidence because I spend some time in Indio almost every summer. I go out there and visit a buddy who I go and play golf with out there. It is one of the golf capitals of the world, the Palm Desert, Coachella Valley area. They've got some treacherous driving to do here pretty soon if you're going all the way to the coast. You're going to be heading through those mountains. That's got to be kind of a treacherous thing too, huh?
At times. You know, it depends, like, time of the year. When you're going over Grapevine, which is on I-5, going out of L.A., heading north, that can be a lot of fun, especially in the wintertime. The roads get real slick up there on the high elevations. You also deal with a lot of the fog. And, man, that just isn't much fun in my book. But we still got to get things from point A to point B.
Has weight ever been a problem carrying a certain load through mountainous areas like that? And do you ever have to divert your route because of the amount of weight you're carrying?
Well, weight isn't really the big factor. A lot of times it depends on the product that you have. Like in the wintertime, we don't run... I do a lot of produce for Whole Foods with Stevens Transport, and we don't run, you know, I-80 in the wintertime, too much of a chance of getting shut down. So you got to run, you know, if you pick up in the northern part at the very beginning of the winter, then you got to run all the way back down from, like, Salinas up north and Watsonville up through there. all the way back down to I-40 and across. And sometimes we'll even have to run all the way back down to I-10, depending on whether the roads are shut or what. But you just got to keep them wheels moving, man.
Hey, you sound awfully well-versed in your craft here. Now, how long have you been an actual OTR driver? You're recently new to the business, no?
Well, I started when I turned 42 in 03.
Okay.
It was September of 03. First part, I went to a driving school in Orlando, Florida, called Roadmaster. And I did that for 3 weeks, finished on a Friday, and flew to Dallas, Texas, to Stevens Transport. And they put you through an orientation class about 3 or 4 days, and then you go out with a trainer for 5 weeks, 35 days, that teaches you how to, drive the truck, back the truck, supposed to teach you how to, do your paperwork and all that. And then you go back, and when I went through it, Stevens Transport had this thing called Dumb and Dumber.
Okay.
That was two guys that had just finished their training that go out for 21 days together and try and put it all together with nobody over their shoulders, with nobody authority over your shoulders. But since, it's been, 7 years, it'll be 7 years with Stevens October 1st, and since then, they've revised everything, and now they have what's called a finisher trainer for those 3 weeks, which is what I'm presently doing. I used to do the five-week trainers and train students for 5 weeks, but now I'm doing the finishing 3 weeks, which is making sure that they can read their maps, they do their trip plans, they can get their loads there on time, they do their proper paperwork. I mean, there's a whole lot more to it than just getting behind the wheel and driving.
And I would say that it's a myth, those guys that go get their driver's license. I remember when I was a teenager and I got my first driver's license, I guess it was one of my first ones, or maybe the first time I renewed, I actually got the, I think they called it a Class C license, and it was listed as a chauffeur's license, and I was walking around saying, hey, I could drive an 18-wheeler with this license if I wanted to. It's not quite that easy, right?
Back in that day, you could have, though.
Wow.
Just in the late 80s that they've converted all this from the chauffeur license to a CDL license.
Uh-huh.
And now they're even going to come down on us. They got this new thing coming out called the CSA. I don't fully understand it. But what used to be was, the companies, trucking companies, when we'd go through weigh stations and get tickets and stuff, that would put points against the companies. And that's how the companies are rated for people like Kraft, your big-name distributing places. That's how they decide whether or not they're going to use you or not, is by your rating by the DOT. So now what they're doing, and it hasn't come in effect yet, but they got this new CSA. I couldn't even tell you exactly what that stands for off the top of my head right now. But what it does is it's going to rate us truck drivers. So now, if we get an overweight ticket, it not only affects the company, but it affects us. We don't have our logs right, any of that. It's a point system against us.
It follows the driver, so to speak.
Right. So now it makes the driver more responsible. Like, I'll give you, for instance, just last week when I came out of Florida, picked up a Tropicana load, and I was overgrowth with no fuel. So the only thing I could do then was, I just told them, look, I'll run it, because they've got a contract with Tropicana, and Trop not reload their trailers. You take it or you don't run for them. And that's just the way it is right at the moment. But of course, I ran it and I got lucky. I've got the pre-pass, which is a signaling device that some of us have going through the weigh stations. That gives them your information. You don't have to go in. So I had to stop every 300 miles and get fuel. And what a long trip that makes.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, pre-pass, I've heard advertised. It's like a nationwide weigh station automatic system that you have?
Right, right. It's almost like your easy pass for your toll roads. Sends a signal to them, and it gives them your DOT information and all that.
Cool.
And they can even be closed, and they still get your information. So what that also does to you is it gives them a timeline on you.
Right.
From point A to point B.
Sure. Well, so does SunPass, for that matter. I'm still surprised that they're not keeping track of things like SunPass and EasyPass and then contacting you later and say you were definitely speeding between this exit and this exit, so here's a ticket.
Well, let me tell you about that.
Okay.
They can audit the company, come into what's called compliance. That's the division of the companies that handle the logbooks, and they can ask for these 200 drivers' logs for the last 6 months. And they can go back 6 months and say he was in California, 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, and his average was 63. Here's his ticket.
Wow. So I was joking around about that, but that actually does happen.
That absolutely can happen. And if they get a hankering, you know, or just a bad taste in their mouth with somebody or a company, oh, absolutely.
Hey, I find it fascinating that you said you started this career when you turned 42. Now, this is a kind of an inspirational kind of thing for people who, you know, this day and age, people are changing jobs left and right and making career decisions late in life that they didn't think they were going to need to make. How easy was it for you to decide? What were you doing leading up to this career change? What other kinds of jobs had you had in the meantime?
Well, probably the 10 years before, I was basically in the bar business. I spent about 9 years at strip club.
Uh-oh.
And Cheetah 3 in Pompano.
The world famous Cheetah 3, okay.
And I owned the valet for quite a few years and, fell in love with one of the entertainers.
Of course you did.
Did all that, was engaged, never did get married.
Okay.
And she's passed since. She was a juvenile diabetic.
Uh-oh.
And she passed a couple of years ago.
Oh, no. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Well, she's in a better place, that's for sure.
Okay.
And went to work at Cheers at night, just bar backing and bouncing. And, did that, and I was basically just wasting away, drinking to spinning my wheels. And I turned 42 in August, and on the 9th and on the 11th, a guy came in that was in there after hours, and the bar back was acting as the bouncer, and I was, of course, there on my night off, and raised a beer bottle to him, and I took it from him and took him to the door, and it was locked, so I bounced him off that a couple of times and opened the door, and as I was throwing him out, he reached back and busted a Marine Corps chain off my neck that was given to me by a vet, and I kind of lost it, so I went in the next day and said I was done. And a month later, I gave myself a month to clean out. And a month later, I went to the truck driving school. I kept looking for jobs, kept seeing this, you get to drive a truck and you can get your CDL and no expense and all this. Of course, it was $5,000, but
hey, I'm sure it's made itself back many times since then.
Oh, you know it, but I hit that crossroad in life where, enough was enough. I had partied for 42 years of my life, and I just really wanted the other side. And trust me, I can't do it like I used to.
So it's part of a whole big, gigantic, all-encompassing cleanup process for you. And I guess it's a good way, because if you're on the road every day, obviously you can't be thinking about mind-altering substances. So that's a good place to turn.
All these new guys, they talk about it and this and that, and, I don't tolerate it. I've even quit smoking. I quit in 07.
Well, being the on-again, off-again smoker that I am, I can't imagine being in a truck like that for hours on end and not opening up the window and having a couple,
I've been thinking about it a lot lately.
So you got into it at a time, I guess, 7 years ago. I guess the economy was a little better than it is now, and then we had some rough times the last couple of years. I know truckers have massive expenses, you know, fuel. Let's just start with fuel. So how did the I don't know if it's still affecting the business, and how were the last couple of years as far as your productivity goes?
Well, as far as me, in 06, I actually was my best year in the business. I actually was Stevens Transport. They have about 2,000 trucks. I was their third highest paid driver.
Nice.
My third year in the business.
That's...
And, you know, I got to where in 07 there that I thought my shit didn't stink anymore.
Right.
And thought I could go anywhere and I would be, you know, I basically in my head I thought I was going to be headhunted and everybody'd want me. But I tried to buy my own truck and was out doing that for 4 months, buying it from an owner-operator, ended up getting screwed, about $20,000, went back to work for Stevens.
There you go.
You know, it's been rough since then. I went back to Stevens for about 14 months, then got pissed off at him again, left for a year, and I just went back in February, and I won't go anywhere else. I'm done.
But the actual economy, the slowdown of the country, had to affect trucking overall. Did you see the overall numbers and the amount of trips that you were getting decreasing over the past couple of years?
Well, sure, absolutely. I was just in our main terminal in Dallas for, they bring us back every 90 days. They inspect the trucks every 90 days, and I've got high blood pressure, so I go to the doctor every 90 days. But through that, they update us for, like, winter workshops, spring workshops, summer workshops, you know, all of these things that keep you informed.
Right.
And the companies I've worked for, brother, let me tell you, it just there's no place like Stevens. I know I came back to them because I knew I would be able to keep my driver's license. I knew I'd be able to keep my CDL.
Right.
And with this CSA, the new system they're coming up with, I knew I could stay informed enough to where I could keep my CDL and not get in too much trouble, hopefully. But through the class, when I was just there on Friday, they spoke of 9,000 trucking companies that have closed down. 9,000 in the last 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, it's hit us hard. It's hit a lot of the independent people hard. I lease from Stevens, so I am an owner operator. Because I train, I put a lot of miles on, and shoot, they give me a new truck about every 12 to 16 months. I'll run 250 to 350,000 miles. If I go 16 months, I'll be up closer to that 325, 350, and
wow,
they take the truck from me and give me a brand new one. So why do I want to buy when I can, you know, they just keep giving me the brand new ones, and I you know, I couldn't ask for much more, you know. It's expensive. Trust me.
That's some serious miles. I mean, you think about that for a minute. For those of us who brag about putting 100,000 miles on a car in 5 years, I mean, that's nothing compared to what you do in a mere year and a half. You can triple that, you know.
Yeah, well, I got, this is a 2011 387 Peterbilt, and I just got it, left the yard in March with it. I went home for 4 days then, was in Cleveland with my brother with a heart, doing aneurysm stuff for 2 weeks, and then I've been home for 3 or 4 days, and I was in a class for a week, so I've had about a month off. So I've run 3 months, and I've got almost 60,000 miles on.
Unbelievable.
I ran 5 weeks by myself, and then I've run 9 weeks with a student.
Here's a stupid question from just an ignorant question. How often do you have to change the oil in that thing?
Every 30,000 is what they recommend. You can stretch it about at 35.
Mm.
And it's not the cheapest. It runs, you know, about $300. To do what they call it a PM.
Wow.
They have two different levels. See, at 15,000 miles, you're supposed to go in and change your fuel filters, and you know, that allows a little bit better fuel mileage. And, everything is geared around fuel mileage now. I used to be one of them pedal to the floor, you know, get all you get miles, but now I run about 60 mile an hour, and I can tell you right now, I'm getting 7.2 miles to the gallon.
Wow.
And I used to get 5.5. So if you think my cha-ching isn't much but greater, oh, absolutely, man. It's taken 7 years of that push to draw myself back and really look. When I came back to Stevens this time, it was very humbling because totally different attitude and a different look in life. I used to run 6,000 miles a week with a student every week, and I only took 28 days a year off. So you can imagine the pressure I was putting on myself. Now I run about 4,000, maybe 4,500 miles a week, and I'm relaxed. I can talk to these guys sanely. I don't lose my temper as easily. And life is good right now.
And with all that, you still get better gas mileage from just being a little more disciplined about the speed. That's cool.
Sure, sure. And you know, when you do it, you start noticing people around you that are also doing it.
Right. And just in case anybody's wondering, just, rest assured, Ken's driving hands-free right now, being as safe as he possibly can, doing this interview while he's on the job, approaching Los Angeles as we speak. Now, I would imagine that since 9/11, the things on the road with security and law enforcement have changed drastically. Have you ever found yourself caught up in a situation where your rig was suspicious or gone over, is scrutinized by security in some odd situation? I'm just guessing that you, at some point, you had something like that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. We do a lot of loads that go into New York, so we go over that George Washington Bridge. We go over all the boroughs, and every once in a while, if they get a tip, it could be a false tip or it could be a real one, they get the mirrors out, they go underneath the trucks, they get in the trucks, it gets nuts. They got these mobile x-ray machines even that they can bring out at times, it really heightens your awareness, that's
right,
for sure.
Right, right. Keeps you on your toes and makes sure that you got all your ducks in a row when you approach New York, I'm sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's just one of the places,
Yeah.
You can always tell when, like in Pennsylvania, a lot of their way stations are in rest areas, and the only time they're open is if they've got a tip.
Right, right, so right.
It can either be something for that nature, or it could be drugs, or, it's a tip of some sort. That's that much.
Right. And then I'm also guessing that in the course of your travels over the road, and that's just law of averages, the many hours and miles and hundreds and thousands of miles that you've traveled, I was wondering if you could share with me one of the scariest moments you've ever encountered. I'm sure that you've been witness, and hopefully not that directly, but a witness to some spectacular crashes that you've actually seen or incidents that you've been out there. Is there anything you care to share with us that we would find, at least fascinating?
I could say sometimes you can go a couple of weeks and not see anything, and then sometimes you go hour by hour and you see everything. Wintertime, that's always a different subject because you wake up with the snow coming down, and you finally can get rolling, and as you roll down the road, there's nothing but metal from one side to the other.
Yeah.
And it just makes you tighten up inside, and you say your prayers, that's for sure.
Can you recall anything specifically that frightened you to any degree?
Not the biggest thing that frightens me, Bill, is when I get in, the snow part doesn't really scare me that much because I can slow down. There's certain things I can control about it.
Right.
The thing that scares me the most is when I get into the fog.
Yeah.
You get into that fog and, it seems like you always get into that when you're under the gun and you got to make that decision that it doesn't matter if you're late as long as you arrive alive.
Right.
And, but still, man, the fog, it doesn't matter what kind of lights you got. That is, to me, always been the most scariest because not only is it hard to see, but it tires you and tires your eyes
right.
So rapidly that that's been my scariest point because I've been in it and I've only been driving for an hour or two and get into the fog.
Yeah.
And in a matter of 45 minutes or so, I'm starting to doze.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
You know, they talk about seeing the dogs and all that, you know, in some of the movies and stuff. Let me tell you, I've seen some unusual things, and it has, at times, absolutely scared me. And the sad part is that you get yourself in that situation, and it can be 50 miles before you get yourself stopped.
There's
just no saving. And you're just, you know, you turn on the radio, you roll the window down, you try everything you can to stay alert. I'll get on the phone with other drivers, you know, students, wake somebody up, something.
Right.
But, yeah, that's been, in my 7 years, the most scariest times are when I get into that 2 to 4 o'clock hour of the night where your body temperature drops and you just get so tired that it doesn't matter if you're Mighty Man or not.
Right.
When you're behind this wheel, it happens, and I've seen some. I've been fortunate enough that for whatever reason, somebody watching over me, I backed off my foot on the throttle, and you know, I look down, I'm doing 45, and I'm like, oh my God, thank God, because you can be wide-eyed, have your eyes wide open, but you can be out like that and back, and what you see is just. I can't describe it. It's scary.
Wow. And I was kind of hoping that we were going to get like a gruesome description of an accident, but that's probably not a cool thing for you to be talking about while you're in the middle of an important run anyway. So.
Well, I kind of steer away from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I at times you can picture yourself there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like you know, they say that race car drivers won't go to the hospital.
Right.
And visit their teammates and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
They want to be there themselves, you know. And kind of along that theory, you know, I've woke up, you know, or slept at nights and seen stuff, and I've dreamt about it. And you know, you wonder if it's deja vu or what, you
right.
know?
Right, or a premonition of some sort. Wow.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I've felt. You know, my dad's been gone for 24 years. And I swear to you, my first New Year's on the road, it was New Year's Eve, and they're telling us, get off the road by 10 o'clock. You know, Stevens is very safety-oriented. And it was about 10:15, and late, dark, and something was happening ahead of me. And I looked at my hand on the steering wheel, and I swear I saw my dad's hand on my hand. Let me tell you, there was a rest area before the accident, and then I went.
Wow.
Yeah, that's God's honest truth. I believe in that. I believe that when people are gone, that they do watch out for us. And I've definitely at times, I haven't been the smartest driver. I try to be, as we all do. But every once in a while, you're on that push, and you know, I've been fortunate enough that I've got 7 years of clean slate, no late loads or anything, and at times, you know, I've backed off, and I'm thankful for it.
Well, it's an admirable job, and it sounds like you're doing a great job at it. Keep up the great work. We've been talking to Ken Plank, who's an OTR driver, over-the-road trucker, and he's calling us on the job as we talk to him in the wee hours of the morning, somewhere between Las Vegas and Los Angeles on I-10. Ken, I really appreciate you coming on with the show with me today. Well, we can invite people to find you on Facebook, obviously, as one of my friends out there. And how else can they learn more about trucking and the business you're in and the company you work for?
You can go to any of the sites, Stevens Transport, who I work for, WW Stevens Transport, and they get you into recruiting.
Right.
Tells you all about what they do. They're one of the top refrigerated companies in the United States, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The top money makers, that's for sure.
That's awesome.
They own everything that they've got. Every truck that they buy, they own.
So then you're not responsible for owning your own rig. That's great.
I don't own it. But I lease it.
Right.
You know, and lease it at the tune, just the lease. I'll give you a couple of figures. My lease is $705 a week, and then the insurance and stuff, another $350. So I got about a load $100 nut before I even pay for fuel.
Every week.
That's weekly.
That's weekly. That's just phenomenal. Well, it's always been an intriguing profession of mine. The numbers are staggering. The stats and the things that truckers accomplish behind the scenes every day and every night and pretty much go unsung about it. I appreciate it. I find it incredibly intriguing. And I really appreciate you giving this very detailed description on the Bill Murphy Show tonight.
You got it, Bill. I'd love to talk to you anytime, you know.
Thanks again, Kenny. Drive safely, man, and we'll talk to you again soon, man.
All right, safe travels.
Ken Plank, today's guest on the Bill Murphy Show. Good stuff. And before we wrap up the show, I'm going to just give you a little recap of what we've accomplished over the last week. If you've accessed this show via BillMurphyShow.com, you'll see the whole new look. All the icons and clickable items on the page should be working fine. We please urge you to contact me at murph@BillMurphyShow.com if you come upon any problems accessing anything on the website or if you have any concerns in general. And, of course, use that email address if you'd like to become a guest sometime on the show and join me and tell me your story in your profession and whatever else that it is that that you do. Also, iPhone users, go on your Safari on your iPhone, go to BillMurphyShow.com. When you get to the site, hit the plus button at the bottom and save the bookmark on your home page and your home screen. And the icon will come up for the web-based app. And then you'll only have to press that icon once to access the show each and every day. And of course, you can subscribe at iTunes. And it is in there, has been approved, and is up and accessible via iTunes, so the show can be automatically downloaded into your iPod. Again, any questions? Murph@BillMurphyShow.com. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition as we bring you intriguing, compelling guests every single day for about a half hour or so. That'll about do it, everybody. Catch you again tomorrow for another edition of The Bill Murphy Show.
Log on each weekday for another edition of The Bill Murphy Show at BillMurphyShow.com. If you'd like to be a guest, send an email to Murph@BillMurphyShow.com. That's MURPH@BillMurphyShow.com. A Murphonics Media Production.